You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, since we last spoke, markets seem to have not got ahead of themselves, but told you one thing. And what they tell me is that if markets want to go up, they'll go up. If they want to go down, they will go down. And at the moment, they want to go up because I've seen three prints, the last 3 months' prints of US consumer price inflation, which is a current market participant obsession. It went from 3.3%, which was good, up to 3.4%, which was deemed bad. And today's print, back down to 3.3%, markets running riot. Record highs in Europe, yes. Record highs in the United States. This must be so much money sitting on the sidelines to invoke this sort of enthusiasm price-wise.
Well, look, I mean, if you're a U.S. investor, and up until what I'll look it up now, 2 years ago, whenever you were getting 0.6% on your long bond rate, and yes, you were getting effectively zero on your short-term rate. Now, all of a sudden, the long bonds are what they're sitting at now, 4.5%. That's a lot of money. You know, that's a good yield. But when the equity market runs, 4.6% is not good enough. Eh?
No.
So the market, the moment people sniff that interest rates, that the outlook looks reasonably good, et cetera, the money will flood. So there's a lot of money on the sidelines. And hopefully there's a lot of that money coming to emerging markets. You know, you would hope so.
One would hope so. I mean, I saw a report out from a major investment bank in Johannesburg today about Eskom and the refurbishments and how the unplanned outages,
yeah, the outages, yeah,
outages have been reduced. And they were actually quite glowing, if you can be glowing about Eskom, quite glowing in their assessment of what is going on. I wonder, yeah, if you're experiencing that on the ground, because as we were saying off air, but what happens when it gets to -2 in Johannesburg in about a month's time? Will it be the same then?
Yeah, look, I mean, we haven't had load shedding for months now. So it wasn't just I know there was a whole lot of stories that it's an election plot and the day after the elections we'll be in stage 6 again. That's absolutely rubbish.
Yes.
However, we're now having informal load shedding. In Johannesburg, the electricity infrastructure can't handle the power load, especially now during this cold spell, that they're actually now doing load, what they call load reductions. So we're not affected yet. My house or my workshop, we're not affected yet, but there are areas in Joburg having load reduction. So there's electricity coming into the system, Joburg power, but the system itself is creaking. So they've got to shed load off the system. Otherwise, the distribution network will back up. So in other words, it's typical South Africa.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's hope
that there's good news and then bad news, etc.
Yeah, but it sounds as though they're managing it better.
Yes. Look, it's certainly better than the whole country experiencing load shedding if you've got and it's certainly not anything like stage 6 load shedding or even stage 2. As I've said, since they've announced it, which I think was last Thursday, I think, we've experienced none whatsoever. So they do specify that it's high use areas. Now, in other words, certain parts of their network are experiencing loads that they can't handle. So those are the areas that are being cut. Because it's no good cutting an area where the distribution network can handle the load, because it doesn't save, you know, it's not like load shedding, it doesn't save electricity that someone else can use. So they're only cutting the areas that are overloaded, essentially, where the infrastructure can't handle it. So this is all good news. And then, you know, there's that survey that came out yesterday, whenever, about the ports in the world.
No,
and
I didn't see that.
They looked at 410 ports, and Cape Town came in 410th, and Tubercha, Port Elizabeth came in 409th.
So you can't really go down much from there.
No, you can only improve from that. You can only improve from that. Now, there was a whole lot of discussions. No, but you didn't take into account the changes we made. So what's the difference whether you come in at 380? You know, it's irrelevant. But that's not the point. That's not the point of what I'm making. Is they interviewed a chap at Cape Town Harbour. Now, he doesn't work for Transnet. He's like the chairman of the liaison committee between people who use the port and Transnet. And he said some quite encouraging things. He said a lot of the senior management there has changed, that they realize that this is a serious problem and it is getting attention. And even though the problems persist, he said it's much better. And Transnet now are not just indifferent. They actually realize there's a problem and it's working, and they're going for public-private partnerships, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there is some action in South Africa on Eskom, because I truly believe we are now not getting load shedding for two reasons. Eskom is doing a better job. They've done a lot of maintenance, so their availability factor is much, much better. And then secondly, I mean, we've got lots of sun here, as you well know.
Yes.
South Africans have put another Medupi power station on their rooftops. I mean, they're generating 3,000 or 4,000 or even 5 maybe, I can't remember, megawatts of power from rooftop solar. So we've literally built another Kusele. So that extra 3 or 4 or 5 megawatts, plus the extra 3 or 4 or 5 megawatts that Eskom is managing to get out of their system, means effectively load shedding, you know, it is going to happen going forward, but it's never going to be the intensity that it was. I don't think we're going to have these weeks of stage 6 load shedding and then talking about stage 8 load shedding and all of this. Eskom has done a better job. And as I said, the private sector has built a new Medupi, and there's more and more private sector. I mean, I'm not talking rooftops now. I'm talking the big plants, the big industrial plants. There's more and more coming on stream now. And the use of solar by households and alternative power by big industries is now not even an issue of load shedding anymore. It's a commercial decision. I mean, I've heard quite a few people talk about it, and I've looked into it a little bit. Like me at my house, I can install a system there. I won't put the geyser on it because that uses a lot of power. And my stove's gas, so that's not a problem. And so you run your geysers on Eskom, but you run everything else off your solar and that. It's about a 2-year payback. So it's actually a commercial decision. It's not even a load shedding decision. It's actually because electricity has just gone up another 12.5%. It's actually a rands and cents argument. It's not even the load shedding argument anymore.
There's 2 points I want to make here. The first point is that South Africa is blessed with wind and sun. I don't think yet we've even touched the surface of the exploitation of natural resources that South Africa has with the offshore wind farms, or even the most windy areas statistically in South Africa. But you can put these things up. It's not difficult. It's expensive, and as you say, it takes a few years.
But if the sector's involved and you're getting a 5-year payback and you're getting a 12, 13, 14% return on capital or 18% return on capital, it's going in.
Yeah. So you've got
that. It's just a commercial decision.
I mean, I know there's big solar farms out there, but there could be more. I mean, I know people get very nostalgic about the Karoo and places like that and the Northern Cape, but there's enough space for everybody.
There's enough space for everyone. And the amount of square meters of land that it uses in places where there's plenty sun, like the Karoo and the Northern Cape, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the land's not used for livestock or you know, you're not pulling out billy fields or cutting down forests. It is vacant land where, you know, maybe a few cattle browse on it.
Yeah, but a couple of sheep and a few snakes, as far as I've known.
Shortage. Yeah.
Okay, the other thing, which is probably more important, what we've been talking about in the last few minutes, is that behind the scenes and behind the headlines and moving the naysayers aside, what's been going on over the last 2-3 years, while there has been horrible load shedding and so many people moaning about robots not working and the destruction of society, things have been going on in the background, because this doesn't happen overnight. You don't suddenly change the personnel you were talking about at the port in Cape Town. That has been a decision that has been made and a process that has been followed. So things have been happening quietly. But the quiet things don't make the headlines, Wayne.
No, they don't. And you know, we've had one of our chaps, one of our senior economists, he's spent quite a bit of time looking into this. And, you know, he says there's a lot actually that has been happening behind the scene.
There we go.
You know, we've spoken about Transnet. We've spoken about Eskom. But many, many other things have actually been happening that we don't hear about on a daily basis. So, you know, maybe, and it, maybe it's a big maybe, the worst is actually behind us, that it will be better going forward in South Africa in total. It won't be good, but it'll be better than what we have had in the past. So, I mean, that is good news. All we need now is a commodity cycle in our favor. And, you know, it could actually be quite positive over the next few years in relation to what we've experienced over the last few years. And of course, that's good news.
Yes, it is very good news. I was looking at a few results this week, mainly South Africa based companies that brought their results out from the JSE. And I saw things like Omnia and Oceana, Alexander Forbes, Rainbow Chickens and things like that. And I looked at the numbers and there was a couple of bad ones, but mostly good, you know, anything between sort of 5% and 10% higher. And I thought, well, is it corporate activity? Is it, well, it was with Rainbow, in Rainbow's case, but other things, maybe it's coming off a low base. But it seems to me that there's certain smaller South African companies that maybe your organization wouldn't look at because they're not big enough to warrant your attention. But it just seems to me that things might be getting a bit better. And I look at Spar today as well. Okay, it's because they're spinning off Poland or selling Poland, which was an injudicious investment in the first place. But also the results were better than expected, I thought. What do you make of Spar?
Yeah, look, they've had terrible times. I mean, they had huge problems. Ireland hasn't been bad for them.
Yes.
But Switzerland, the currency is so strong that the Swiss guys are nipping over the border into France and Germany and Italy and buying all their groceries there with the strong Swiss franc and then nipping back across the border. So their turnover is down. Yeah, it's up in rand terms, obviously, but it's down in Swiss francs. And this has been going on for a long time. But then in South Africa, they had the most catastrophic SAP implementation in KZN in their distribution center there. And I mean, this caused havoc. And I can't remember who else, but there was another listed company that also did a SAP implementation that also caused havoc. So I don't know whether SAP's the right way to go when you come to do anything, but be that as it may, even that's getting better. They say it's still not right. There's still two major problems for them to sort out. And then the base business in South Africa is actually a reasonable business with one little qualification.
Okay, what is it?
And you know, my experience is you get Spars and then you get Spars.
There's the so franchise or there's the corporate owned, right?
Well, not just that. I think some franchisees as well. You go to Spar, there's two Spars in sort of my catchment area, if you like to call it that.
Yeah.
That are astonishingly good, though, that are as good as any deli, Woolworths, anything you will find. The fresh food, the everything is fantastic. So the one is, you know, just off, it's at Grosvenor Crossing, and then the other one's at Broad Acres. And I'm sure there are a few more like that. So, and they're all, I think those two are owned by the same guy. But the bakery is fantastic. The imported stuff, I mean, it's astonishing. And yet, unfortunately, if I go to the Spa here in the Kaya Sands area, I mean, it's not bad. I'm not saying it's terrible, but it is not even vaguely the same standard as those other two ones. Whereas with Checkers, certainly, and maybe Pick and Pay as well, and Clicks, you know, they are all more or less the same wherever you go in the country.
I often frequented the Spar in Greenpoint. So they're just on the border of Greenpoint, actually, because I had two jobs in the area. I used to go there and do my weekly shop when once I'd finished work, go there. It was voted the best spa in the country a couple of years in a row.
Yeah.
It had a brilliant Tops as well. Right next door to it, there was the Tops, which was always full. And I must say, as you quite rightly say, if a spa gets it right, it's as good as Woolies, if not better.
Yeah, not better. So certainly, so that's my only negative comment there, is that when you see the science spa, don't believe what you're getting is of a consistent, not quality, but a consistent offering, put it in broader terms. Yeah. Like if I go to the local spa here in Kaya Sands, which I go to often, you know, they've got all the regular stuff, but their deli is relatively limited. You know, you can buy a Chelsea bun and you can buy a couple of little things like that. Whereas the other ones, you can buy Black Forest cake and you can get imported hams. And, you know, so you're not sure when you walk into a spa what's on offer.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up the first thing you associate with a deli is a Chelsea bun and a piece of cake. Does that say something about your sweet tooth?
Yeah, no, I like a Chelsea bun. Yeah. But I must say the local spa here, there's a place in Kaya Sands, just down the road from my workshop, called BRM.
Mm.
And they make spare ribs. And they stock. You can go to buy it at their factory shop if you want to. But this local spa here stocks their spare ribs. And I must say, their spare ribs on a brine with a little bit of molasses, surprisingly enough. If you sort of get a food brush and you put a bit of molasses on the spare ribs and you brighten it, gets that like slightly sweet, sticky sort of outside to it. It's actually delicious, I must say. That's one nice thing about the local spa, is they got BRM ribs here. And then BRM also make a really tasty Prego chicken or pork Prego. Nice curry taste to it, also very nice on the broth. So actually it's not a bad place to be close to.
Okay, so you've turned an analysis of spa's results and disposal of Poland into a food program, which we were going to come to anyway. And as you've done it, we'll hasten towards that now. But let's just finish on the markets now, Wayne. We've got the All Share with about 45 minutes to go or so for the JSE. We've got the All Share up close to 1.5%. We've got world markets at record highs in Europe and the United States of America. You can't fight it, can you? Anyone that says, oh, no, this is the top, yeah, just wait a bit, I think, because this is a proper momentum upside market.
And it is actually quite interesting when you look at it. You know, everyone says, but, you know, the Magnificent Seven and, you know, that the market's expensive. So when you look at the earnings yield of the S&P 500, you know, it's not as bad as what you'd think it is. So when you look at the earnings yield, which is the inverse of the price earnings ratio, you know, really expensive markets, you know, the earnings yield will sit as low as 2-2.5%. It's 3.6 now, which is, you know, maybe slightly on the expensive side, but it's certainly within acceptable valuation norms, if you'd like to put it that. In other words, we're not sitting with a massively overheated market, despite the fact that it's hitting record highs, simply because, you know, it is supported by earnings. You know, there are earnings that underlie the market. It's not just a crazy rating that's pushing the market through the roof, you know, like it did at the dot-com bubble burst, or, you know, maybe the global financial crisis burst, or, you know, there's underlying earnings there. So this is not just a ratings and not just putting a massively unrealistic valuation on the market. And maybe that's why the market's been able to withstand this massive increase in interest rates, and not just withstand it, actually go up. But, you know, we've got to be a little bit, and I spoke to someone about this a while back, we've got to be a little bit cautious sometimes about looking at the market and the performance. Let me just call up the Nasdaq here. I mean, everyone's going crazy, obviously, about the Magnificent Seven. But you must remember the NASDAQ, even though it showed a spectacular performance for the last year and a half, it's now only slightly higher than where it was pre-COVID. Eh? So the peak pre-COVID was 16,000, and it's now 17,000.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. And a lot of
basically where it was 2 years ago, roughly speaking. You know, so it's been spectacular, but some of these big shares got pounded during that. Well, it's not just the COVID, it's the whole, it's the increasing in interest rates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, it's not COVID, it's the interest rate story. I'm getting mixed up, but COVID was 2020. When interest rates started going up in 2022, these shares took a pounding. So now they are only literally slightly above where they were before interest rates started going up.
Okay, you know, and that's been fixed now because they are going to come down, although there was a little...
They are going to come down. So the market, I mean, the market cannot give you the same performance as it has over the last year and a half because you're coming off a far lower base. You're coming off a base where the market had already fallen 30-odd percent. Now, we didn't experience that in South Africa. You know, we didn't get that massive derating, thank goodness. But the market will more than likely still go up.
Looks like
not to the same extent because it, you know, it's coming off such a low base. So the, you know, the, I mean, the NASDAQ went, gone from 10,000 to 17,000 in a year and a half. I mean, that's phenomenal. But it went from 16,000 down to 10,000 first before it went up again. So lots of people and I found this quite often actually say, oh, look at the performance in the last year and a half. And it's spectacular. Of course it is. But I said, hey, just look at the 2 and 3 year performance. Eh? It's not quite so spectacular.
Exactly. Bring them down to earth, Wayne. As we speak, the S&P futures, which are soon to be spot because it's the June futures, 5,447, up around about 1.2%, all-time record highs. Now, Wayne, I'll need to talk about food to you. We couldn't do it last week because you were just about to go into impart your wisdom to a bunch of eagle-eyed investors. So I'm going to tell you what I did recently. And I was going to go back a bit here. I don't know if you've ever been to places like Portugal or rural Spain where they take a pig and they slaughter it. And they eat everything, Wayne, from snout to tail and everything, and I mean everything in between. And one of the things that they use is that's probably more palatable than other things that you're thinking of in your head now is pig's cheeks. Now, it's just the pig's cheeks are just below their eyes, as they are on a human as well, and they're big, chunky, depending on the size of the pig, but big chunky pieces of flesh, and they're one of the cheapest bits of the pig, and you can get them at your butcher, which I found out recently, and all you have to do is find a good recipe of how to soften them up, because they would be tough. It's not something that you're going to flash fry and cut up, because it's just it will be like leather. So you braise it for about 2 hours. I roasted some peppers and some tomatoes and made it and then blitzed it with my little hand blender thingy and made a lovely sauce. Put that and onions and carrots and things like that into a heavy bottomed pan with the pork cheeks and some herbs and just braised it for 2.5 hours. And this thing came out, it was melting, it was like butter, and it cost virtually nothing. So that was my thing. I'd never had pig's cheeks before, and I don't know if you have, but very well worth it if you've got a good butcher, Wayne.
No, I haven't actually ever tried that. I know down the road, yeah, they sell that at BRM, that I was talking about earlier on, they sell pig cheeks Prager. Oh. And my friend who works with me in the garage, yeah, he's bought it before, but I haven't tried it yet.
I seem to remember you've got a bit of an aversion to stews because of a painful childhood with your mother's cooking. Or was it something else? I don't know. But anyway, if you get the chance during the winter...
It's definitely stew.
Okay.
Significantly painful experience.
Oh, dear. I'm sorry. Well, if you do ever get over it, and it's -1 in Johannesburg, this is a hearty stew. And the thing that would really get you excited is a big pile of creamy mashed potato on the sides to mop up that gravy at the end. Oh, goodness me. I was in heaven. When you went to Bloemfontein last week, and did you have a good culinary experience there, or is there something else you want to tell us?
Fantastic. No, no. fantastic culinary experience. Went to a little place called the Warm Karoo, is the name of the actual venue.
Yes.
And I must admit, it was anything but warm there. It was absolutely freezing.
Yes.
But that was but then we had wine tasting.
Nice.
Which happened to be Takara.
Oh, Takara, isn't that owned by one of the GT Ferreira, yes.
Yeah. Takara. And and then we had canapes for starters, of which by far we had so the canapes was a butternut soup, which was delicious. Then they had a nice, like, crispy bread, like, you know, brioche type of crispy bread that they put preserves on and onions with a lovely little sauce. Mm. That was also good. But then they had Baburti spring rolls.
Oh, that sounds
and
good.
I had seven of them.
They expect no less from you.
Absolutely delicious, like you cannot believe. And then we sat down for dinner.
Mm.
And dinner we had a seafood cocktail starter with a tempura prawn on top of the the starter. And the starter was in a crispy phyllo pastry basket. I mean, that was just delicious. And then we had another like starter, which they gave it another name, but it was a starter, which was a wild mushroom risotto.
Very nice.
I mean, that was also just too delicious for words. Then we had a palate cleanser, a little lemon sorbet, little ice cream thing. And then we got steak.
Okay, tell me.
With a nice pepper mushroom sauce on it. And roasted vegetables, which surprisingly enough, I'm not a big vegetable fan, were absolutely delicious. With then that little, what's that like? It's not potato, but it's made from, polpetta? It's made from
polenta.
Maize.
Polenta,
that's it. Polenta, with a polenta side with gravy, with this, the pepper sauce on it. Oh, it was astonishingly good. And they had a big fireplace going and they had a quite subdued music in the background. But then as part of it, the music thing, they had a chap playing the saxophone to this background music. And I mean, it was so subtle. It was very, very nicely done. And then we had pudding, which was a chocolate mousse type of thing, which was also delicious. And then with each meal, we had the wine tasting. And I mean, I just had to walk to my room. So, you know, you could enjoy the wine tasting. And I mean, it was really a pleasant evening. But I mean, I had to work extremely hard to actually, I mean, I'm not as though this was just a jolly. I mean, I had to talk for about 6 minutes.
As much as that.
I did talk for about 6 minutes and then I could sit down after that very strenuous work activity. I could sit down and enjoy the six course meal, however many courses it was, and reminisce very fondly about the Baburti spring rolls.
Seven.
And then I went to bed because I'm an old bullet now. I went to bed at about 9:15, 9:20. It started at 6 in the evening. Yeah. I went to bed about 9:15.
Slept like a log.
But then slept like an absolute log. But then apparently the dregs of humanity who stayed behind there only finished off at about 12:45.
These youngsters.
Yeah, the dregs of humanity were still there at 12:45. Now, that might have been me 20 years ago, but no longer. So it was a delightful culinary experience.
Very nice.
In Bloemfontein.
Oh, well, I must say,
this place is it's a little bit out of town on the Kimberley side of Bloemfontein. Terrible road getting there, and they'd had huge rain. I mean, there were swimming pools in the road. It was a dirt road.
Hmm.
I mean, there were literally swimming pools in the road. But the actual venue was delightful. It's more of a function wedding type venue. You know, it's not really a hotel. It's more of as I said, a function stroke wedding venue, but a lovely big open field in front of it, and there's an equestrian center next door, so you could see the horses running around. It was very, very civilized. Sounds it was really a nice
Sounds delightful,
experience.
Wayne. And after that story, told with great gusto and enthusiasm, I have to say that speaking for 6 minutes and all you got was 7 babootis and a 6-course meal, you really are a selfless person.
Yeah, no, look, I do it for my company. You know, it's tough.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I had to fly down to Bloemfontein, and then got a taxi order, whatever, he came to pick us up, Kudi or whatever, came, picked us up, dropped us off there. Then we sort of like sat around in the afternoon with the, because it was quite warm during the day when the sun was still up. Mm. And we sort of like sat around and, you know, chatted a little bit and had a couple, you know, we had some little snacks. The place brought out some little sandwiches and some little snacks, which were nice. And then we chatted a little bit till about 3 o'clock. Then we went to our rooms and, you know, lay on the bed and, you know, caught up in your emails. And then at 6 o'clock, we shuffled on down to the venue again. And then, you know, we had the 7-course meal and we had lovely Takara wine. And it was absolutely delicious. And then we woke up in the morning and they gave us a proper breakfast with bacon and eggs and lovely muffins if you wanted it and crumpets and scones. And even a piece of boerewors with your bacon and eggs and a fried tomato. And then I had to get in the plane and fly back, you know, and I had to work for 10 minutes. I mean, but someone's got to do it.
You really, you're an example to us all, Wayne. Well, and all the youngsters.
I think so.
I reckon so.
Yeah, well, the youngsters must look at how hard us old guys still work.
Tell you what, Wayne,
and we flew out at 9:30, so we could have breakfast at 8 o'clock, sort of thing. Very, very civilized.
Excellent. You sound as though you've had a marvellous trip. Wayne, thank you very much for your reminiscences and your market analysis today. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organisation, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.